Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts on Hockey Night in Canada joins us now. Elliot, didn't find your headphones, did you?
No, I didn't. I apologize, Marchese. So, plus, I was also on a call. So I was actually doing legitimate work. You have to excuse me.
If Jeff was here, you wouldn't do that.
Yes, I would. I would have been 10 minutes later.
Okay, let's hammer right down on last night. You know what? Let's start with the Blake Coleman non-goal. I'm watching that, yeah. And I'm watching the replays, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way that they can overturn this, because as far as I know, you're supposed to watch this back in real time, and even if you watch it in slow motion, I don't know, I don't see that distinct kicking motion. And I know your tweet was ended last night with a wow, so I kind of feel like we're in the same boat on this.
Well, I mean, if you saw what I said on air, you know, I thought it was a goal, but there's a lot of split here. You know, Kevin and Jennifer, who you may be surprised to hear are slightly more elite athletes than I am, thought that Coleman kicked it, had a distinct kicking motion. Obviously, the NHL, the Situation Room, felt that way. I didn't. I've seen goals over the years, especially like there was one this year. I was making the rounds last night from Chris Tierney. There was another one from Nate Thompson. I don't know what year that one was from, but you know, they seem to be much more distinct than that, and they counted. And there was another one someone was sending me from a Seattle-Vegas game, which I admit I haven't looked at, but he said, watch this one. And so, like, I thought when you take a look at some of the goals that have counted over the years, I thought those were much more obvious kicking motions than the Coleman one last night. You know, generally I feel that we're trying to encourage goals, and we shouldn't take them, like, I feel we shouldn't take them off unless it's like a field goal kicker kicking from 50 yards. And I didn't think that was that. And also, you know, the one thing I think that people are have been discounting is that, you know, he was flying through the air. His right leg collided with Smith's pad, and CeCe was on his back. So, I mean, Coleman's an outstanding athlete. Maybe, I mean, he could have done it. The league obviously felt he did. But I just saw it as more as an incidental play. Now, I know some people are saying, well, the puck was going in anyway. And my point is that really shouldn't matter because he did touch it. So that kind of takes the fact the puck was going in anyway out of the equation. It's a shame. Like, there's no question about that, to see, you know, Calgary's season end after that kind of a play. But, I mean, overall, we have to remember here that Edmonton earned the series and was the better team.
No question. No question about that. And the guy who had been, you know, kind of carrying the team on his back in some respects, Connor McDavid, admittedly wasn't very good last night and still manages the overtime winner because, of course, it had to be Connor McDavid. But that's the brilliance when we talk about him. That's his brilliance. He can maybe not be there for stretches of a game, but when you need him to do something, he's there. I didn't love, like, I mean, it's a good shot by McDavid. I didn't love Markstrom on that goal. And frankly, I didn't love Markstrom throughout the whole series. And when we look back on you know, that whole thing with Markstrom was supposed to go to Edmonton and he didn't, and he chose Calgary and Edmonton goes into scramble mode. Well, Edmonton was able to use that money pretty wisely and bring in guys like Evander Kane and Zach Hyman, who were big pieces to this series and have been big pieces to this playoff run.
Well, there's no question about that. Hyman's been huge for them. Kane's been huge for them. Kane is not similar to the other situations. Like, that one kind of dropped on their lap in a very strange and surprising situation that has not yet been resolved. Like, you know, we don't know where that's going to go. I mean, there's a chance. I don't know what the percentage of it is, but there's a chance, Matt, that, you know, at the end of the season, they could say that San Jose's move was illegal and he's still under contract to them, which would be, you know, one of the weirdest things we've kind of all gone through. But, you know, if you take a look at them, look, their best players were their best players. McDavid was unbelievable. Dreisaitl was phenomenal. Kane was very good. Hyman, as you said, was very good. Their defense was solid. Smith overcame four rough periods to start and was very stout in net. You know, and their support players, you know, gave them big moments, like Puljujarvi, his big goal last night, Bouchard, a big goal last night. I mean, you know, the fact is that it's really amazing when you think of it. If you go back to the moment, like everybody imagined where they were in game two when Calgary was up 2-0, you know, we thought Calgary was going to run these guys out of the province. And, you know, the reverse happened. It's, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm still trying to process where this changed. It's really incredible. And I know it sounds like Markstrom was hurt here, but, you know, the change from him in the first round to him in the second round, I think was really jarring and stunning. You know, I think Edmonton's speed and their unpredictability, it got him off his out of his comfort zone, and he couldn't recover. And plus whatever it is he's dealing with. It was a stunning, stunning result. Not that Edmonton won, but I think the way it happened, especially after the way the series started, it's going to be hard to handle in Calgary. I think for the fans and the organization, I'm sure there's still a lot of, you know, what happened here and still trying to process it.
We'll key in on Calgary in a sec, but, you know, you mentioned Leon Draisaitl in there, and Connor McDavid is getting a lot of the attention, and for good reason. He's been great, but, I mean, I feel like Leon Draisaitl is not getting enough spotlight here. 17 points in 5 games in the series. He had 4 assists last night, 5 straight games with 3 or more points, which in the playoffs, which is an NHL record, and he's doing it basically what we understand on one leg. Like, can you speak to how impressive this run has been for him? And it's almost benefiting him that Connor is getting a lot of the spotlight because he's been able to shine just as much on his own.
Well, he's a great player. Like, Draisaitl is a phenomenal, phenomenal player. And, you know, one of the things we do in hockey is we romanticize and lionize people who play through pain. Like, you know, there's a lot of talk about Tanev and what he's doing for Calgary. And, you know, it got reported last night, I think, by Rick Dalwall about, you know, how seriously injured Tanev was. And, you know, the same goes for Draisaitl. He's clearly in pain. Look, he can't center his own line. I mean, that's all you need to know. He's playing right now with McDavid because he has to. He's hurt and he has to. And he's still having that kind of production. I mean, you take a look at, you know, 17 points in 5 games is, like, nobody's done that before in terms of 3 points for 5 straight games. It's unheard of. And, you know, it's phenomenal. And the guy deserves all the credit he's getting. You know, it's amazing when you think of Edmonton, where they were 4 months ago and where they are now. You know, we were talking about how missing the playoffs there was not an option and there'd be consequences. And now they're going to be playing for the right to go to the Stanley Cup final. The team has made a big turn, a huge turn, and obviously McDavid and Draisaitl are huge parts of that.
Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts joining Matt Marchese here on the Jeff Merrick Show. Okay, Calgary. Where do they go from here, Elliot? I know there's big questions in the offseason. Matthew Tkachuk is a restricted free agent. There, you know, there's been some concern maybe about him taking his qualifying offer and going to free agency. And Johnny Gaudreau's an unrestricted free agent as well. And that's the big one right now because, you know, that's one that has to be resolved before July 13th or afterwards. Where do you think Johnny Gaudreau ends up in terms of, do you think he thinks about an extension with Calgary because he can get the extra year? Or do you think he says, listen, I'm a 100-point scorer. I'm going to test out free agency because I know that I'm going to make money somewhere.
Well, I think there'll be conversations, obviously. I do think they'll talk about – I mean, well, first of all, they're probably in shock right now, right? Like, not expecting to be here. I think they thought they – like we just talked about, they're probably wondering, holy smokes, like, how did this happen? And I'm sure everybody's going to take a deep breath for a couple of days and just come to grips with this. I have no doubt they'll talk. I think there will be conversations about it. I think that, you know, depending on what Calgary decides to do here, I have no doubt that teams over the next, maybe not right away, but over the next little while will reach out and see if the Flames are interested in trading his rights, if they don't think they can make a deal. But I think that's still a bit of time away. I think right now you're going to sit, you're going to decompress, you're going to get over the pain of this, and then you're going to sit down and talk and see where you really are. I mean, the one thing about the Flames and Goodrow is they really put a lot of this off. They didn't want to deal with it during the season, especially the player, and I don't think there were a ton of conversations. And now we're going to sit down and find out where we really are. It was a great year for him. It was a hard finish. And, you know, the first note I got this morning was everybody has to take the emotion out of it. So I think that's what it's going to be. I think they're going to let this breathe for a couple of days and then kind of figure out where everything goes in terms of conversations.
More on the Flames when Eric Francis joins us at the bottom of the hour. Okay, the other game last night, it's the ongoing story that nobody can figure out. The Carolina Hurricanes continue to win at home 3-1 last night over the Rangers. They finally score on the power play. And on the flip side, New York Rangers only managed 17 shots on Antti Raanta. And Gerard Gallant was not impressed with his team's effort last night. On Raanta, he's been really good, and I don't think there were a lot of expectations for him coming into the playoffs, seeing that, you know, well, Freddie Anderson's going to be back at some point. But if Freddie Anderson does come back, how long is that leash for Raanta?
It's long now. I mean, you know, Rod Brind'Amour played, right? And you can't lie to players. They know who deserves to be in the lineup and who doesn't. And Antti Raanta has won 7 games for them. He has them on the cusp of the Eastern Conference Final, and every player will tell you that he's earned the spot. Like, a lot of those games they've lost haven't been his fault. As you mentioned, Carolina's been kind of a schizophrenic team compared to home on the road. I thought last night was a game that I finally saw the true Hurricanes. They played as in their coach's kind of style and eye. They forechecked ferociously. They shut down the neutral zone. I understand why Gallant was upset about the way the team played, but Carolina completely shut them down. They just didn't allow them to do anything. I think a lot of the time, Raanta's kept Carolina in games or won games for them where they haven't been as good as they could be. He's the number one guy. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, Anderson now, I mean, he's practicing, but when's the last time you saw game action? You're going to be very careful about throwing him into this. Even though he's got experience and he's done this before, it's not just that Rant has been good. It's just that, you know, you have Anderson who's been hurt for a while, and you're also careful about throwing him in under those kinds of situations. And the other thing, too, with Anderson is, you know, he does have a history of being very careful with his injuries, which is fine. You know, you don't want to put him into a situation where you're worried he's going to get hurt again. So that, I think, adds to the level of challenge that the Hurricanes have here.
Last game that Frederik Andersen played was April 16th. So that it's been a while. I wanted to focus in on
5 weeks, 6 weeks.
Yeah. I wanted to focus in here on Seth Jarvis. And he was the 13th overall pick. He played in Portland last year, and then he comes in as a rookie and almost immediately makes an impact with this team. Last night, made a great pass on the power play goal, finally a power play goal. But this is a player that has been given a lot of responsibility as a rookie, and to me, what's most impressive is it's not like he walked in on a bad team and started getting big minutes. He walked in on a good team, a very good team that had cup aspirations, and he's been a real focal point, whether it be playing on the first power play unit or playing, you know, big minutes with big players on the top line. He's been super impressive, and he does really feel like a Carolina Hurricanes player, doesn't he?
Well, I think they'd be happy you say that. Look, he's a really talented guy, Matt. There's no question about it. There were a lot of teams that liked him. I think Minnesota tried that year. Minnesota had I think it was Boldy that they took that year, or maybe it was Rossi that they took that year. I'd have to remember. But they tried to get a second first round pick that year to get Jarvis, I think. And I think the team they offered to trade with was Florida. if I remember this correctly, and people can look, Florida was picking 12th and Carolina 13th. And Minnesota correct. Tried to get a pick to go to 12. And Florida said no because they really liked Lindell. And Carolina had their eyes on Jarvis. So, you know, there were teams that certainly knew what we were dealing with here. You know, I think the one thing about Brendan Moore is he's really smart about the way he uses him. He puts him in situations where he can be successful. And that pass last night was a brilliant pass. And, you know, the other thing, too, and Ron deserves credit for seeing this, is that Trocheck, who scored the first goal, boy, did Carolina need to get him going. Trocheck made a nice little screen on Shesterkin so he couldn't see the pass. And that, you know, made him a step late to stopping the goal, but which was a brilliant little play. But I agree with you. I think Jarvis is a hell of a player, really talented.
Yeah, he really is. And Trocheck, it's funny that we talk about Vincent Trocheck because he scores the shorthanded goal to kick things off for the Hurricanes last night. And what a pass by Jordan Staal there too. Just incredible. But, you know, when we talk about Trocheck, we look back at the Florida Panthers and what they maybe need in their game. And that guy is probably Vincent Trocheck, a guy that they traded to Carolina a couple years ago.
Yeah, and Trocheck's a UFA.
Yeah, and he's gonna make some money because there's a lot of teams that are looking for a little bit of sandpaper that can go along with the skill that he brings.
He's a center, too. He's going to make what we call Marchese money.
Oh, so his money jangles in his jeans? That's good. good for him. On the New York side, Mika Zibanejad, six goals, 9 assists, 15 points in the playoffs, scored again last night. And you look at that trade, and we're going back to 2016 here, but talk about a trade that worked out so well in the Rangers' favor, because I don't think anybody saw this kind of production from Mika Zibanejad. And he's proven that in the playoffs, there is a carryover for him from the regular season where he was a point-of-game player.
I don't know if I would agree that nobody saw this kind of production. I think people knew that Zibanejad had talent. It just wasn't flourishing there, and Ottawa was at a point where they wanted to win. You know, Derek Brassard, you know, he played very well in Ottawa. He was a good player for them, and I think that was purely a trade based of where Ottawa was at the time and what they thought they needed to push their way through. And I know historically that trade hasn't looked as good for the Senators, especially as Zibanejad has turned into the player that people thought he would be. Sometimes deals get made, and people don't like this in retrospect, but sometimes deals get made because you think you need to win. And an organization decides we want to win now. And that's why things happen. You know, you take a look at baseball, people always talk about like Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson or Doyle Alexander for John Smoltz. I think people are generally smarter about these things now. However, when you've decided you're in win now mode, you make moves like that. If you'll remember, Ottawa at the time, they wanted to push and try to win, and that's why that deal got done.
You also forgot the Seinfeld favorite of Ken Phelps for Jay Buhner. Don't forget that one.
Why did you trade Ken Phelps for Jay Buhner? Yes, it's an excellent. I'm just laughing thinking about it now. My scouts my scout said Ken Phelps.
what an amazing show. Okay, before we wrap up here, Colorado St. Louis tonight. We know what happened in game five with the multiple comebacks. But, you know, I thought about Nathan McKinnon's performance in game five. And despite them not winning, if Colorado goes on to the Stanley Cup final and maybe even wins this thing, I feel like we can look back on that game as, you know, a career-defining moment for Nathan McKinnon, who was absolutely incredible. And we've seen him before play like that. But that one felt different, even in a loss.
Well, I think if the Colorado wins the Stanley Cup final, they're going to need 9 more wins, right? I think there'll be more career-defining moments for McKinnon and probably bigger ones in these playoffs. You know, the tough thing for him, and this is the thing I like about McKinnon the most, is he will not care about that goal right now because it didn't result in a W. It was a loss. So if you even try to talk to him about how great that goal is, he'll basically tell you good riddance and get lost. I think that somewhere down the road, he'll have more appreciation for it. But I would say this, if Colorado wins the Stanley Cup this year, there's going to be another great MacKinnon moment, if not two or five or 10.
Yeah, he's that type of player. As Jeff describes him, a rhinoceros on skates. Elliot, thanks so much for taking a couple minutes for us today, and I'll talk to you next week. Lucky you.
Yeah, what days are you on next week?
Thursday, Friday. Jeff is on assignment.
I've got a headache those 2 days. Just so you know, next week.
I was going to say, you sound like my wife. All right, Elliot, you are free. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care, Marchese. Speak to you later, buddy.
See ya.